Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer, and maybe you heard Joseph Big Joey Messina, once dubbed the Last Don, has become Joey the Rat. The Bonanno crime family boss has become the first official boss of a New York crime family to cooperate with the authorities when he flipped back in 2004 after being convicted on 7 murder charges. This week, he's in court testifying against his hand-picked successor, Vincent Vinny Gorgeous Bassiano, in the hopes that the feds will drop death penalty charges for an 8th murder. He's been on the stand all week revealing details of the inner workings of the mob. Never talk indoors, never on the phone, he explained, what it all means to clip someone, what a boob is. Obvious stuff to anyone who watched The Sopranos. You may have also heard about the mob associate who last week stabbed the owner of the famous pizzeria Lucali in Carroll Gardens. You'll also remember back in January that 127 suspected mobsters were rounded up in the largest mafia bust in New York City history. So what's going on in the New York mob? Is there some kind of shakeup in organized crime, or is it the same as it ever was? Jerry Capizzi is here to explain. He writes a weekly column about organized crime at ganglandnews.com, and he's been covering the mob for decades. Jerry, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Jamie. Good morning.
You've got the best job in journalism.
Well, I don't know about that, but it certainly has been a job that has kept me busy over the last few years, that's for sure.
All right. So it's been a busy week for you.
Yes, it has. As you said in the introduction, Jamie, Joe Messina is the first New York Mafia boss, official boss, to testify for the government. He testified so far 4 days. Today's his 5th day on the witness stand, and he's basically trying to sink Vinnie Bassiano for the 2004 murder of a mafia associate named Randy Pizzolo. Pizzolo was killed while Vinnie Bassiano was in prison back in December of 2004, and the government claims that Vinnie ordered the killing from his prison cell, and for that deserves to be executed after he's convicted of this murder.
And he is obviously the first, as you say, Don to roll. But why is he testifying? Obviously, he doesn't want to be executed himself, but he got some more out of this deal, right?
Right. Well, he decided to cooperate basically right after he was convicted of those 7 murders in 2004 and was facing an additional trial for an 8th murder for which he faced the possible death penalty. He claims that facing the death penalty was not a concern. He was interested in making sure that his wife and family members could live out their lives in relative comfort. He gave the feds $7 million in cash, $5 million in gold bars as part of his settlement agreement with them, and he agreed to cooperate and help them in any way they felt, you know, he could. Yeah. His efforts to cooperate were rejected for many months. It wasn't until he came to them and told them that he had information that Vinnie Gorgeous was out to kill one of their prosecutors, that they listened to him a little bit more seriously. And after he did tape Vinnie Gorgeous in some kind of conversation about the possibility or a plot to kill a prosecutor, the government did decide to use him as a cooperating witness. They ended up getting Vinnie Gorgeous talking about the murder of Randy Pizzolo.
Right.
And now 7 years later, maybe 6.5 years later, he's on trial for the murder for which he faces the death penalty.
So did Big Joey's cooperation with the FBI lead to that huge roundup in January where they got all 5 members from all 5 families plus the big family in Newark? De Cavalcante. How do you say it?
De Cavalcante, the real Sopranos.
The real Sopranos. Thank you. That's how I say it. The real Sopranos. So is that all connected?
Not really. I mean, Joe Massino has been cooperating. Now, the intelligence that he provided to the feds kind of ended in 2005, when he began cooperating. That roundup of, I think there were members of seven crime families, including the five in New York, was based on the government's efforts to send a message out to the community and the mob itself that we're still out there chasing you guys. You may have thought we've forgotten about you, but we're still out to get you. And it's interesting that roundup occurred a couple of weeks before the FBI here in New York reduced the numbers of agents that are actually going after the so-called traditional organized crime, the Italian-American mafia, to an all-time low. They used to have five squads going after the five families, one squad per family. Now they have three squads focused on all five crime families with, two squads basically having to deal with two crime families.
All right, Jerry, you up for some callers, from questions for some callers?
Okay, sure.
All right. We're going to take your calls. We have a few minutes, and we have a New York Mafia expert here. So if you have any questions, anything you always wanted to know but never had anyone to ask, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Of course, I have a million questions, and here's another one for you. Our guest is Jerry Capisi. He writes a weekly column about organized crime at ganglandnews.com. The Lucali owner stabbing last week. Both of those men have been charged with assault, Jerry. And, of course, this isn't the first time that the pizzeria has been linked to the mafia, right? Do you know anything about that? Is that related in any way to any of this? Or is that just rumor and innuendo, as the mob likes to say?
Well, there's no question that Lucali's pizzeria does employ or has employed a so-called mob associate, Black Dom Dionisio. He's a Colombo associate who's awaiting trial on some old racketeering charges. He got a job at the pizzeria and was put on by the owner, Mark Iacono. The stabbing itself is developed into a he said thing, with both of them accused of assault and attempted murder charges, it seems. And in my view, it's going to be difficult for either one of them to get convicted of much, since they both had stab wounds, and they're both going to blame their adversary, as the instigator in the fight. The one thing for sure, however, is that Benny Giratano, the Genovese crime family associate, mm-hmm. will likely spend some time in federal prison. He was released back in September of last year for a prior conviction he had for being part of a bank burglary ring, and is under supervised release for 3 years. And this stabbing incident will likely cause him to spend another year or two in prison.
All right. Now, since we're throwing around all the names, let's lay it out. There's the there are five families, right?
Correct. The Bonanno crime family, that's Joe Massino's old family.
Right.
And Vinny Gorgeous is the acting boss who's on trial right now.
Okay.
And there's the Colombo crime family, which is which is the smallest of the five.
Okay.
There is the Lucchese crime family, which is next in line as far as size. The Gambino crime family obviously became noteworthy and infamous and famous, depending upon your perspective, when John Gotti was the boss back mm-hmm. in the late 1980s, and the Genovese crime family, which is the biggest and by all accounts the Ivy League of organized crime, the most powerful of the five crime families, based in the New York area. All five crime families do have rackets outside New York, into New Jersey, some into Connecticut, and other hot spots, around the country.
And what kind of rackets are you talking about, Jerry?
Well, the traditional organized crime rackets of loan sharking, bookmaking, extortion, labor racketeering, whenever they can get involved in it, controlling unions to try and have access to pension funds and access to real jobs and jobs for their friends and family
members. How about
members.
Drugs and prostitution? Anything that heavy?
Drugs is certainly something that all members of all five crime families have been involved in. Prostitution is probably not a staple, but last year the members of the Gambino crime family were charged with using a call girl ring to service members of the people who attended their gambling parlors. So they're involved in that. Anything to make a buck, legal or illegal, is something that the mob will get involved in if it feels it can get away with the crime. And they always feel they can get away with it.
All right. Let's bring Robert into the conversation. Robert, in Queens, you were on with Jerry Capisi.
Yeah. Hi, Jerry. I'd like to ask you a question. Is there an approximation of what the Mafia Five families actually cause an average American in terms of whether you're buying a newspaper or a fruit place or a Chinese place? Does the overall cost that the Mafia is involved with legitimate business and pressuring legitimate business, how does it touch the average New York City resident?
Well, according to Mr. District Attorney Robert Morgenthau a couple of years ago, his estimate was a pretty good one. It's pretty much 10 or 15% was the estimate that he put on the additional costs that New Yorkers had to pay for clothing and goods that were put into that were manufactured by in the garment center because of the taxes that New Yorkers had to pay. And I think that's a pretty fair estimate, probably 10 or 15%. You know, the mob has been involved in the on the waterfront, in construction industry, and generally all those costs that the industries have to pay to the mob get passed on to the consumer.
That was a terrific question, so thanks to Robert for that. Real quick, George in Huntington, question for Jerry?
Yes. I'm kind of naive with this stuff, and I'd like to know, just a quick bullet point thing, what is the involvement of unions and the mob? I mean, are they still relevant now in the unions?
Excuse me, I missed that question.
What labor are the union connection, Jerry, to the mob, if any?
Well, yes, the mob, labor racketeering is the one area that has made the mob much more influential and powerful than any other crime, any other ethnic group over the years. And the ability to control an industry through the manipulation of unions is something that has given the mob, a lot of clout. Not only does it give them the opportunity to steal from the union members, steal from the pension funds, and shake down the businessmen who have to pay off to avoid labor strife, it also gives the gangsters an opportunity to put themselves on payrolls for no-show jobs to satisfy the IRS, and also to give real jobs to members of the crime family who are not involved in organized crime. It's a big problem. The government has done quite a bit to reduce the impact that the mob has on labor racketeering and unions, but it's still out there, and they're still out there trying to make a buck any way they can.
Jerry, you know, we mentioned earlier the Sopranos, but I got to ask you, you've been covering the mafia for a long time, and you see how we romanticize it as a culture, movies, The Godfather, Goodfellas, all of that. How much of this, and then the trial comes, and we've got Tony Bagels and Junior Lollipops and Gorgeous mm-hmm. This and Big Joey and all that. But how much does the mob itself work to fit into the stereotype? I mean, do mobsters romanticize the mafia the same way the rest of us seem to?
Some of them do. Some of them do, Jamie. There's no question about it. Going back to the days of The Godfather, I distinctly recall some people trying to imitate Marlon Brando's version of the raspy-throated Godfather who played Don Corleone. And there's no question that young wannabe gangsters back in the 70s and now in 2011 still look at some of the things that are portrayed on TV and in the movies and, opt to be them like those people themselves. There's no question about it.
Art imitates life, imitates art, huh?
And we go back and forth, around and around. Correct.
Are we seeing the fatal decline of the New York Mafia with this case?
Oh, I don't think it's the fatal decline. I think the mob has been hurt. It's been reduced in stature and clout, but it's still out there. There are still five crime families. They're still trying to make a buck. And with the decline of manpower and women power that the FBI now has going after the gangsters, there is a concern by many law enforcement officials that the mob will get a chance to rejuvenate and reacquire some of the old status that it used to have before the federal onslaught began maybe 20, 25 years ago.
Well, it's been really informative to have you here, Jerry, and we'll continue the conversation. Jerry Capici writes a weekly column about organized crime at ganglandnews.com. Thanks for being with us.
It was a pleasure, Jamie. Thank you.
And listeners, you can join Brian on Monday, May 2nd for the final event in his First Principles debate series. The question this time, capitalism, is it moral? Co-sponsored by Demos and the Ayn Rand Institute. Our debaters this time will be investment banker and Ayn Rand disciple Bill Allison versus Washington Post columnist and MSNBC contributor Ezra Klein. Admission is free, but we do ask that you RSVP at our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. And while you're there, suggest a movie clip about capitalism and watch the ones already posted. Also, take the survey about the pros and cons of capitalism. That's our First Principles debate, Is Capitalism Moral? For free on Monday, May 2nd, and join the pregame going on now at itsafreecountry.org. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, Katha Pollitt on politics and poetry.